It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And as most of you know, there's a bunch of investigations against Facebook for how they've handled or haven't handled users' personal information. Now, that impacts a lot of us who are on the platform. But what if you're poor? Low-income people in the United States are especially vulnerable when it comes to safeguarding their digital privacy. And that includes everything from what kinds of ads they see to what kinds of products they get. Michelle Gilman is a law professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, and she's here to talk to me about how this impacts poor Americans. Michelle, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
So what does this wealth gap have to do with the privacy gap?
The experience of low-income people online and the needs of low-income people with regard to their digital privacy are different than for their wealthier counterparts.
How is that? Like, what is it? What's the experience that low-income Americans face when it comes to their digital privacy? How is that different than those who earn more?
Well, information is being gathered about all of us, but when profiles are collected, the impacts for low-income people can be quite different. I work as a lawyer with low-income clients, and I have a concern about them being targeted based on the profiles that have been assembled about them. I'm worried that they're being targeted for predatory financial products like payday loans. So I'm worried about that targeting problem, but I'm also worried that they're being excluded from more mainstream opportunities that are available to middle class and wealthier Americans.
I want to drill down a little bit into that because, first of all, having a presence online in and of itself is supposed to be able to create opportunity, right? If I have a LinkedIn profile or a Twitter account or any of these things, that's supposed to show who I am to the world. But you're saying that it can also make discrimination easier for example, for employers.
That's right, because the digital dossiers that are being assembled on each of us allow employers and financial companies and educational entities to more specifically target people for on factors such as race, gender, financial status, and the like. It came to light a few years ago that data brokers were very highly segmenting different consumer groups, and some of the segments were based on people's financial status. And I'll read you some of the segments that were identified. They had clustered people into rural and barely making it as one category, as ethnic second city strugglers as a category, as small town shallow pockets. And I could go on and on, but that gives you a flavor of the hyper detailed level of targeting that can be done now based on someone's financial status.
And we also understand that low-income Americans are essentially giving up more online in terms of their data and privacy for government benefits, for example, than people who get other types of benefits like childcare tax credit.
That's right. The cost of accessing public assistance can be quite high for low-income people in terms of their data privacy. A lot of personal information is always gathered about them. It could include biometric information, the results of drug tests, extremely intrusive questioning about their personal life, their health histories, their sexual backgrounds. It can be quite intense, the amount of information that's gathered. And that can also be layered with in-person surveillance, such as home visits or in-person questioning, and all that together is a level of surveillance that middle-class people, frankly, wouldn't stand for as a condition of receiving the type of benefits you talked about, like mortgage home tax deductions and the like.
Michelle, I want to talk a little bit about how and why this gap exists. I mean, why is it that low-income Americans, like you're saying, are leaving more data available online? Are they not aware of it, or do they feel forced to do it?
It's a combination of both. As we just talked about, to access government benefits, you are forced to turn over quite a bit of personal information about yourself. But there are also different usage patterns by income. So the Pew Research Center did an excellent survey that uncovered that low-income people are more reliant on mobile devices, for example, and that in turn leads to more surveillance because of the geolocation tracking that happens when you're on your mobile device And also because many apps that people download default to very high levels of information sharing.
Michelle, I want to talk a little bit about the targeting element that you mentioned earlier. Advertisers are able for and have been for years to hyper-focus an ad on a specific person, a specific demographic, et cetera. Is that illegal for them to say, we want to show low-interest mortgages, for example, to wealthier Americans than to poorer ones?
It is not illegal. It is illegal to discriminate against people on the basis of their race or their national origin or their gender, but it's perfectly legal to discriminate against people because they're poor. Economic status is not a factor that's protected by the Constitution. There aren't statutes that protect against that. And so it leaves a big gap there in just permissible discrimination. The consequences can be quite severe. For instance, if you can't get a job because of inferences that are made about you from your online profiles, or if you can't access housing because a landlord is using some sort of predictive software to determine if you're going to be able to pay your rent.
I mean, I tend to refer to this, what we're discussing here, as digital discrimination. But I'm sure the financial services companies would say, well, we're just managing for risk.
Managing for risk makes perfect sense. But what we know in the credit reporting industry is that a lot of the data about people is incorrect. And just that process of getting your data corrected is extremely, extremely complex and time consuming. And many people aren't even aware that their digital profiles contain inaccurate information. So, for instance, my students help a lot of clients in expunging criminal records, such as arrests that never resulted in criminal convictions. And this can be a huge benefit to clients in helping them access housing and employment in particular. Even after we get the court order officially expunging the record in our state databases, that data has already been scooped up by the data broker industry and exists out there forever. And it's very hard to track it down and erase it.
What are some solutions to this that are accessible to the community that we're talking about, poor Americans?
There are common sense steps, of course, that people can take, such as using different passwords on different websites, turning on privacy settings on social media, turning off GPS tracking on your mobile devices. But I really don't think that the entire onus should be on individuals to police their privacy. Corporations and government, they should have obligations to help keep our data safe and secure. It should not be open season on gathering and selling and profiting on our data without our permission. We need tools in place to make sure that the algorithms are free of bias. So I really see the solution as being much more structural, much more systemic than asking each individual person to take on this Herculean task.
Michelle Gilman is a law professor at the University of Baltimore. Michelle, thanks for joining The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.